Dermatologists use antibiotics to treat a wide range of inflammatory and infectious conditions. Because of their utility and availability, antibiotics are subject to overuse, contributing to increasing rates of resistance. In our next dialogue, Dr. Clay Cockerill and Dr. Stuart Brown discuss current understandings of cutaneous infections and skin care.
Hello there. This is Stuart Brown, and I'm having a conversation today with Clay J. Cockerill, MD. Dr. Cockerill is clinical professor of dermatology and pathology and the director of the Division of Dermatopathology at UT Southwestern Medical School in Dallas, Texas. Clay is not just an excellent dermatopathologist, he is a superb clinician. Today we're going to discuss some cutaneous infections and their effect on the diseases in which they're born. Clay, some of the recent trends in cutaneous infections, above and beyond just routine staph or strep, what pathogens are we really seeing that are causing these problems in both hospital and community?
Yes, Stu, it's interesting. Unfortunately, as you probably have been reading about in the literature, bacteria are acquiring more and more resistance to our antibiotics, unfortunately. And one of the most significant of these infections that has become more prominent in the community, used to be seen almost exclusively in hospitals, is methicillin-resistant Staphylococcus aureus. But there are also some other sort of dangerous pathogens out there. Klebsiella, there's multi-drug-resistant Klebsiella. We've known there's been multi-drug-resistant Mycobacterium tuberculosis. And there recently was an antibiotic-resistant strain of gonococcus, which is, I know, of extreme importance
to you. That's the one that scares me.
But yes, even antibacterial-resistant gonococcus, which is scary. So unfortunately, a lot of these bacteria now are no longer responsive to the antibiotics that we had years ago. This is probably a consequence of two things. One is perhaps physicians prescribing antibiotics in cases where they don't really need to be prescribed, like people with sore throats, for example, getting penicillin and antibiotics when they maybe have a viral illness and they'll only take it for a few days, but also in industry, using it for cattle, for antibiotic is used for preventing diseases in livestock. And a lot of that has led to antibiotic resistance as well.
Now, we know that in common conditions such as atopic dermatitis, bacteria play such a major role in flares. We know fatigue plays a part, stress to the system, fatigue, lack of sleep, anxiety, they play a role. They're not the cause, but they do add their part, and certainly infection does. What are some of the major things we're trying to do about that?
Well, you're exactly right. The body has what's now being referred to in recent years as a microbial biome, where you've got a normal flora of bacteria on your body. And it varies from person to person, but they started mapping which parts of the body contain which types of bacteria, and if those get out of balance, some pathogenic organisms can come in and flare diseases such as atopic dermatitis, but not only atopic dermatitis, psoriasis can be flared and perhaps even other diseases.
Now, this is the direct bacterial effect, not the superantigen effect, is that right?
Well, it perhaps is a combination of both. A lot of people think it may be the superantigens. In fact, there's some data to suggest that staphylococcal superantigens may cause flares of mycosis fungoides and cutaneous T-cell lymphoma. So it's a serious problem, and the fact that now some of the organisms that cause these flares are not really responsive to the routine antibiotics, we're having to come up with new strategies to deal with that.
In the atopic, which is relatively easily controlled, unless it is the atopic dermatitis that killed Cleveland, normally these are moderately well controlled, and you keep that kid doing well. But well, let's go beyond that, where it's not well controlled. What is being considered now?
Well, we have other modalities, and obviously if there is a bacterial infection, you want to try to treat that, although obviously there are other treatment modalities we're using. In some cases, we're even using things like cyclosporin and, of course, the new topical calcineurin drugs, the
prototypics. But cyclosporin were limited to, at most, a year.
Yes, although in some cases, these kids, when they really have bad disease, it may have to go on for many years. So.
But we use other things that are not as dangerous, at least to affect the kidneys, such
yes.
as mycophenolate mofetil.
Yes, and those work well in some patients, and in others they don't work quite as well.
Methotrexate has been used also in these kids, not as an antibacterial, but to try to help control the terrible severe atopic.
Sure, and ultraviolet light treatments, we use those, and bleach baths is something that's been used. Bleach containing products have been a good health supplement to some of these other things.
Let's talk a little bit about bleach containing products. Now, bleach such as Brandex or Clorox, usually a couple times a week, quarter to half a cup, depending upon the size of the tub and the size of the body that goes into it, age, an adult or child. That's with rather good success in most cases.
Yeah, and I think as monotherapy, it's probably not all that great, to be honest with you. It's really, especially in a tough atopic patient, you need to use it in addition to some of the other things that we normally use.
Yes, as an additive.
But there's no question it's a very valuable adjunct. And I think this was something that our pediatric colleagues picked up on years ago when kids had atopic dermatitis, go swimming, combination of the chlorine in the pool plus the ultraviolet light, they would get better. And then in the wintertime when they weren't swimming anymore, they'd get worse in many cases. So since that time, we then started using a modification of that by putting it in the bathtub, which is unfortunately not the most elegant thing, and patients really are not all that compliant with it, but it is a good modality.
Well, some of the negatives of the swimming in the summer is it's so drying because they don't hydrate afterwards as they would with a regular bath, and so that can make it worse rather than better. And swimming does hydrate the kid beautifully, but then without the moisturizer to retard the evaporation of it, they get dry, and dryness is one of the killer that sets off a frenzy of itching in an atopic.
Oh, without question. And so you have to use something in addition to baths, bathing. You got to put some emollient on right afterwards. I usually tell patients within about the first 30 seconds after they get out, you don't want to let the moisture dry, or just like you say, it'll dry them out and make things paradoxically worse. So absolutely.
Now, we know the pros of using bleach. Are there any cons?
Well, probably a bleach bath, for example, used in the traditional sense where you pour bleach into the bathtub. Most patients don't like that very much because it makes the bath stink. It smells like bleach.
But it smells like a swimming pool, and they love that.
I think it smells a little more intense than a swimming pool, and also will bleach the clothing and the towels and that sort of thing. So that's one of the downsides. And unfortunately, a lot of young boys, for example, that have atopic dermatitis, they don't like to take baths. They like to take showers. And so the compliance rate, even though those work and they're not expensive, is not great. And so you can't use a good modality just because people aren't using it.
Dermatologists are quite familiar with bleaching agents because of our use of benzoyl peroxide. Yes, and so consequently, we are aware of that. And we tell people to use white bed linens, white PJs, things like that, and they seem to respond well for their acne without bleaching. They're great, attractive bed linens. And so we can do that with white towels and things to keep mom happy. Now, we've talked about a couple of conditions that, cutaneous conditions that can be worsened or driven by bacterial infections. You mentioned psoriasis, and I've talked about atopic. What else are there that we have to be careful about?
Well, we mentioned briefly cutaneous T-cell lymphoma. You know, that certainly can be worsened by it. I think psoriasis is another one that a lot of people don't think about, but that definitely can be worsened by
strep
bacterial
lights
infections.
Up psoriasis out of nowhere often enough when you get the guttate psoriasis.
And other than just worsening pre-existing skin conditions, I think people that are immunocompromised for one reason or another are more prone to get serious complications from these infections. Normally, people can fight these off relatively easily, but if, let's say, you have HIV infection or maybe you're taking chemotherapy for some type of cancer or something like that, routine mild infections can turn pretty serious pretty quickly. And so I think you need to be careful about those.
You're definitely helpless when you don't have any white cells.
Yes.
Now, Clay, we as dermatologists use antibiotics, not for everything, but so often we're using it in acne and in prolonged doses, whereas trying to get the patient under control and reducing that antibiotic dose and duration. Aside from working on that, is there something else that we as a profession can do to help cut down on the resistance of a group of antibiotics?
Yeah, there is. And some of the other colleagues that you know very well in our field have been speaking about this, like Guy Webster and others that have talked about acne. They've encouraged our colleagues to try not to use antibiotics as a first-line drug for acne because patients just don't take it in a way like they would normally take it for a serious bacterial infection. low doses over long times, and that bacteria developed the resistance to it. And then the CDC has also been trying to reduce antibiotic resistance. They have a very strong initiative encouraging physicians to use less antibiotics. And there's also even a move to try to decrease the use of antibiotics in the industrial world. So if we can try to use topical things that are not going to be orally used and not taken in a full dose for long periods of time, we're going to serve ourselves better and have some of these routine antibiotics available to us again, hopefully.
One of the things that we found, and I think this study may have been done by Jim Layden, was that the use of benzoyl peroxide significantly alters the drug resistance, and it's less likely to happen on those maintained on a tetracycline derivative, but using topically benzoyl peroxide.
No, I think you're probably selecting out for maybe a more sensitive strain of the bacteria. I'm not sure exactly why that would be the case, but that would be why I would surmise.
There is a product out there that is used for subbacterial doses, but more as just anti-inflammatory. Is that helpful in acne? I know it has been used in rosacea.
Yes, I think it's more of a rosacea product. I don't know. I have not used it in acne, personally. So I don't know that it works well in acne. It's really more for rosacea, at least in my experience.
Yes. But I have found it to be a benefit. But then again, with my acne patients, I'll get them on the dose and try to build up the retinoid, get that controlling it 24/7, and then start reducing, cut them to every other day, cut them down to once or twice a week, and if they can go with that low, then they're off the antibiotic and they can be maintained forever unless something tips the balance.
Sounds like a plan to me.
Clay, I think this has been most informative and certainly will be helping our listeners. Would you care to summarize for us?
Well, I just think in summary, we need to think the next patient we see, whether they've got acne or maybe a small minor folliculitis or something along those lines, where we can use topical therapy rather than an oral antibiotic. I think that's something we all need to be more conscious of. I think in the past we used antibiotics just easily and had things like tetracycline readily available to us. We don't have that anymore. And so if we're going to maintain the efficacy of these antibiotics for the long haul, for more serious infections, we're going to have to cut back on the use of them and resort more to topical things.
Thank you very much, Clay. I thoroughly appreciate your time and knowledge.
Thank you. Enjoy it.
Disruption of the normal skin flora can allow for overgrowth of pathogenic organisms such as Staphylococcus aureus, leading to flares of common chronic skin conditions including atopic dermatitis. Bleach baths, utilizing 1/4 to 1/2 cup of bleach in a tub of water several times weekly, can help decrease colonization of pathogenic organisms while avoiding the need for recurrent courses of systemic antibiotics. The baths must be followed immediately with emollients to prevent drying of the skin, and patients should be warned about the risk for bleaching towels and clothes. Patient compliance with bleach baths may be low at times because of the inconvenience of baths. However, a sodium hypochlorite body wash is available that can be used in the shower, which may be preferable to some patients. Methicillin-resistant Staphylococcus aureus, or MRSA, is one of the most significant multidrug-resistant pathogenic bacteria in the community. MRSA colonization puts patients at risk of recurrent skin and soft tissue infections such as impetigo, folliculitis, abscesses, furunculosis, or cellulitis. Common sites of MRSA colonization include the nares, axilla, perineum, groin, respiratory tract, and open wounds. Mupirocin 2% ointment applied to the anterior nares twice daily for 5 days is a common decolonization regimen. Carriage of MRSA in multiple body sites necessitates total body decolonization with antiseptic soaps such as chlorhexidine or triclosan in addition to intranasal mupirocin. Mupirocin resistance is an emerging problem more common in healthcare-associated MRSA. Bacitracin or silver sulfadiazine are topical alternatives to treat MRSA. As mentioned earlier, antibiotics remain a cornerstone of acne management, especially tetracyclines, which are used for anti-inflammatory properties as well as for direct antimicrobial effect on Propionibacterium acnes populations. Because of this dual effect, development of antibiotic-resistant P. acnes may result in a reduced clinical response rather than outright treatment failure. The prolonged use of antibiotics for acne can also select for antibiotic-resistant strains of other potentially pathogenic bacteria, such as staphylococci or streptococci. To limit antibiotic resistance in acne, topical or oral antibiotics should be avoided as monotherapy or maintenance therapy. Benzoyl peroxide as a leave-on preparation or as a wash is effective against strains of P. acnes resistant to erythromycin, tetracycline, and clindamycin, and may be used alone or in combination with these topical antibiotics. Topical retinoids with or without benzoyl peroxide are appropriate maintenance therapy to prevent developing antibiotic resistance. Oral antibiotics such as doxycycline may also be used in sub-antimicrobial doses, 40 mg per day rather than 100 to 200 mg a day, for anti-inflammatory effects with minimal risk of antibiotic resistance. To decrease the risk of antibiotic resistance in daily practice, the physician should reserve antibiotic therapy for cases with clear medical indication for treatment. Select appropriate empiric therapy based on local antimicrobial susceptibilities. Perform bacterial cultures and select culture-driven therapy when a causative organism is identified. Monitor clinical response closely and continue therapy for the appropriate duration of treatment.